Chapter 24. Marco discovered that Raymond was in Washington very quickly. However, by appearing at the press club, where he had found himself to his chagrin and resentment exactly once before in the years of his political reporting, Raymond unwittingly eluded the men of Marco's unit. The unit was out in force and in desperate earnest. They knew how to unlock the mystery. That is, they held the key in their hands. But now they could not find the lock. As each day had passed since the afternoon Raymond had rented the rowboat in Central Park, and Raymond had been beyond their reach, every element of responsibility in the unit and in the direction of the nation had watched and waited tensely, fearing that they might have arrived at the solution too late. By going to the Hill and to the White House on a Saturday afternoon in summer, Raymond kept showing up exactly where they did not expect him to appear, so they missed him again. 50 minutes after he had left the Washington Bureau of the Daily Press, and after the Bureau Chief had taken off for the weekend in an automobile with his wife and their parrot and the information as to where and how Raymond would spend the day, two men from Marco's unit arrived to take up permanent posts waiting for Raymond to return to the office. At the White House, Raymond duly registered the fact that he would be in Washington for the weekend, but Haggerty said how the hell could he have time to have breakfast when there was a national convention opening Monday? Because Raymond was known to detest his mother and stepfather under any normal circumstances, and because Marco's unit calculated that he would never speak to the Iselins again after the viciousness of Johnny's smear of Raymond's father-in-law, they missed Raymond again by ignoring the Iselin house. Marco's unit ate, drank, and slept very little. They had to find Raymond so that he could play a little solitaire to pass the time and tell them what they had to know, because something was about to cut the thread that held the blazing sword which was suspended directly overhead from the blazing sun. Just before midnight, Raymond crawled into the back of the panel truck, stretched out, and went to sleep. It had started to rain. As the truck came out of the Lincoln Tunnel into New York, thunder was added, and lightning flashed. But Raymond was asleep and could not heed it. Raymond's mother had been merciful. She had understood completely the operation of the Yunlow mechanism. She knew Raymond had to do what he was told to do, that he could have no sense of right or wrong about it, nor suspect any possibility of the consciousness of guilt. But she must have sensed that he had to retain a sense of gain and or loss, that he would know when the time came that by having to kill Senator Jordan he would be losing something, and that his wife, too, and so very much more dimensionally, would suffer an infinity of loss. So, out of mercy, she instructed Chun-Jin to let Raymond sleep until he arrived within a block of the Jordan house. Chun-Jin stopped the truck on the far side of the street opposite the house. It was raining heavily, and they alone seemed to be alive in the city. Three other cars were parked in the block, an impossibly low number. Chun-Jin leaned over the seat and shook Raymond by the shoulder. "Time to do the work, Mr. Shaw," he said. Raymond came awake instantly. He sat up. He clambered to sit beside Chun-Jin in the front seat. Chun-Jin gave him the gun, to which a silencer had been affixed, making it cumbersome and very nearly impossible to pocket. "You know this kind of gun?" he asked efficiently.
"Yes," Raymond answered dully.
"I suggest you keep it under your coat."
"I will," Raymond said. "I have never felt so sad."
"That is proper," Chun-Jin said. "However, sir, if you do the work quickly, it will be over for you and for him, although in different ways. When the work is done, you will forget." The rain was like movie rain. It streamed heavily against the windows and made a tympanous racket as it hit the roof of the truck. Chun-Jin said, "I circle block with car, Mr. Shaw. If not here when you come out, you walk slowly toward next street, 3rd Avenue. Bring gun with you."
Raymond opened the car door.
"Mr. Shaw."
"What?"
"Shoot through the head. After first shot, walk close. Place second shot."
"I know. She told me."
He opened the door quickly, got out quickly, and slammed it shut. He crossed the street as the panel truck pulled away, the pistol held at his waist under his light raincoat, the rain striking his face. He felt the sadness of Lucifer. He moved in the flat, relentless rhythm of the oboe passages in Bald Mountain. Colors of anguish moved behind his eyes in Van Goghian swirls, having lifted edges to give an elevation to the despair. His nameless grief had handles, which he lifted, carrying himself forward toward the center of the pain.
The doors of the house, outer and inner, opened with the master keys. There were no lights in the rooms on the main floor, only the nightlight over the foot of the stairs. Raymond moved toward the staircase, the pistol hanging at his side, gripped in his left hand. As his foot touched the first riser, he heard a sound in the back of the house. He froze where he was until he could identify it. Senator Jordan appeared in pajamas, slippers, and robe. His silver hair was ruffled into a halo of duck feathers. He saw Raymond as he stood under the light leaning against the wall, but showed no surprise.
"Ah, Raymond. I didn't hear you come in. Didn't expect to see you until around breakfast time tomorrow morning. I got hungry. If I were only as hungry in a restaurant as I am after I've been asleep in a nice warm bed for a few hours, I could be rounder and wider than the fat lady in the circus. Are you hungry, Raymond?"
"No, sir."
"Let's go upstairs. I'll force some good whiskey on you. Combat the rain, soothe you after traveling, and any number of other good reasons."
He swept past Raymond and went up the stairs ahead of him. Raymond followed, the pistol heavy in his hand.
"Josie said you had to go down to see your mother and the speaker."
"Yes, sir."
"How was the speaker?"
I didn't see him, sir."
"I hope you didn't get yourself all upset over those charges of Iceland's."
"Sir, when I read that story on the plane going to Washington, I decided what I should have decided long ago. I decided that I owed him a beating."
"I hope you didn't."
"No, sir.
As a matter of fact, an attack from John Iceland can help a good deal. I'll show you some of the mail. Never got so much supporting mail in 22 years in the Senate."
"I'm happy to hear it, sir." They passed into the senator's bedroom.
"Bottle of whiskey right on top of that desk," the senator said as he climbed into bed and pulled up the covers. "Help yourself." "What the hell is that in your hand?"
Raymond lifted the pistol and stared at it as though he weren't sure himself. "It's a pistol, sir." The senator stared, dumbfounded at the pistol and at Raymond.
"Is that a silencer?" he managed to say.
"Yes, sir."
"Why are you carrying a pistol?"
Raymond seemed to try to answer, but he was unable to. He opened his mouth, closed it again. He opened it again, but he could not make himself talk. He was lifting the pistol slowly.
"Raymond, no!" the senator shouted in a great voice. "What are you doing?"
The door on the far side of the room burst open. Josie came into the room saying,
"Daddy, what is it? What is it?"
Just as Raymond shot him, a hole appeared magically in the senator's forehead.
"Raymond! Raymond, darling, Raymond!"
Josie cried out in full scream. He ignored her. He crossed quickly to the senator's side and shot again into the right ear. Josie could not stop screaming. She came running across the room at him, her arms outstretched imploringly, her face punished with horror. He shot her without moving from the left hand. The bullet went through her right eye at a range of 7 feet. Head going backward in a punched snap, knees going forward, she fell at his feet. His second shot went directly downward through her left eye. He put out the bed light and fumbled his way to the stairs. He could not control his grief any longer, but he could not understand why he wept. He could not see. Loss, 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 loss. When he climbed to the mattress in the back of the panel truck, the sounds he was making were so piteous that Chun-Jin, although expressionless, seemed to be deeply moved by them, because he took the pistol from Raymond's hand and struck him on the back of the head, bringing forgetfulness to save him. The bodies were discovered in the morning by the Jordan housekeeper, Nora Lemon. Radio and TV news shows had the story at 11:18, having interrupted all regular programs with the flash. In Washington, via consecutive telephone calls to the news agencies, Senator Iceland offered the explanation that the murders bore out his charges of treason against Jordan, who had undoubtedly been murdered by Soviet agents to silence him forever. The Monday morning editions of all newspapers were on the streets of principal cities on Sunday afternoon, 5 hours before the normal Bulldog edition hit the street. Raymond's mother did not awaken him when the FBI called to ask if she could assist them in establishing her son's present whereabouts. Colonel Marco called from New York as Raymond's closest friend, saying he feared that Raymond might have harmed himself in his grief over his wife's tragic death, almost begging Mrs. Iselin to tell him where her son was, so that he might comfort him. Raymond's mother hid herself with a heavy fix late Sunday afternoon, because she could not rid her mind of the picture of that lovely, lovely, lovely dead girl, which looked out at her from every newspaper. She went into a deep sleep. Johnny called all the papers and news agencies and announced that his wife was prostrate over the loss of a dear and wonderful girl whom she had loved as a daughter. He told the papers that he would not attend the opening day of the convention,
even if it cost me the White House,
because of this terrible, terrible loss and their affliction of grief. Asked where his stepson was, the senator replied that Raymond was
undoubtedly in retreat, praying to God for understanding to carry on somehow.